Community living, it's essential. You don't build community unless you have conversations about building community.
At Home with Growing Older is a nonprofit organization which believes in peer learning and creating discussions which bring the lens of aging to a variety of topics. At Home with Growing Older is proud to be your host of At Home on Air, a radio hour offering connection, community, and knowledge to our participants remotely. Now, we invite you to listen and learn from this live recorded episode of At Home on Air.
Welcome to At Home on Air. I am Susie Stadler, the Executive Director of At Home with Growing Older and the producer of this podcast. At Home on Air is a forum to explore the work it takes to be at home with growing older, but also the delight which comes with it. These explorations are made possible through the insights of inspiring guests from arts, medicine, construction, social work, social services, and beyond, and through comments and questions from you, the listeners. In this season of At Home on Air, we have been inviting community builders and placemakers to discuss their vital role in keeping us healthy and connected, and examine how activism and advocacy are sparking new models of community through affordable housing projects, grassroots organizing, and more. And in this episode, we are really fortunate to welcome a great activist from Canada who maybe didn't set out to become an activist, but certainly has made a difference in the lives of many women. So welcome, Pat Dunn.
Thank you very much for inviting me. This is great.
Yes, it's wonderful to have you, Pat. And Pat, who is a former public health nurse, started an initiative out of necessity. In 2019, she started a Facebook group to connect with women who were interested in sharing a home, and thus her nonprofit, Senior Women Living Together, was born, and it now has more than 3,000 members, Pat. Is this correct?
Yes.
That's amazing. Thank you for sharing the work you do, and a special thank you for joining us from Ontario, Canada. So, Pat, you were widowed, rents were rising, and you were living alone, and you felt alone. So, take us back to this moment. What made you think that other women might want to join you in living together? And what was the biggest surprise when you started the Facebook group?
Well, actually, I had no idea if other women would be interested, frankly. I was focused entirely on my own need at that time, and I just hoped that others would be interested. I thought I might get a few women, maybe 10, to join the Facebook group and start talking about living together. And that would be enough for me to find the ones I wanted to live with. But by the end of the first week, there were 50 women in the group. And by the end of the month, there were 200.
Wow.
So now I had another problem, because I needed to find a way to help everyone find others to live with. The biggest surprise to me was how many women were living in unaffordable housing. There was at least 50,000 single senior women living in unaffordable housing in Ontario at that time in 2019. That was a shocking statistic to me.
So, Pat, you said you were suddenly faced with this problem that you had to help people sort of find each other. I mean, you didn't take responsibility for them to find a home, but you helped them to find each other? Or what did this mean, really?
My vision for it just started to grow as I got to know them in the Facebook group, hearing their stories, finding out what their lives were like and what might work. And it seemed to me that most of them, all of them, were astonishingly wonderful women and had more than enough ability to decide for themselves where they wanted to live, who they wanted to live with, and what kind of housing they wanted to live in. It was something that's fundamental to what we do even today, 6 years later. We provide the platform, the place where they can learn about other women, start talking with those women, and then deciding who they're going to live with and where they're going to live. Right from the get-go, I wanted it to be an opportunity for everyone to make their own decisions. That was important to me.
So you now live with two women, I think, no?
I live with two others, yeah.
And you have lived with them for how long now?
6 years.
I'm just curious, how long did it take you to decide that you were a good match?
Well, I didn't know them before I opened up the Facebook group, and that was in February of 2019. I'd never met them, and it was just from the conversations, which were, you know, texting-style conversations in a Facebook group. I learned so much about each of them, the kinds of questions we were asking each other in that group of 200 that soon became 300 and so on. There was a sense of community right there at that time that we were going to build something together. These women I'm living with now showed up early in that process, and I liked them. You know, they said the things that I was thinking. They answered the questions the same way I did. So we met in person, deciding that we would live together, and started looking for a place to live. So in November of 2019, we started living together. It was about 6 months.
So Pat, what are the key questions people have to figure out if they're a match? You provide a forum or a framework for people to work through?
We started out just with this Facebook group. And then in August of 2019, we opened a nonprofit corporation. And in 21, we opened the website. So to develop the program part of this, we did that in community. We learned what people wanted to know about each other, what questions they had of the women they would live with. And we built a profile. Some people say it's like a dating website that way. They come on to the website, they fill in a profile of basic questions about who they are, what their interests are. Do they have pets? Do they sleep late and get up early? What are their pet peeves? What about alcohol use? What's okay and not okay with you about the use of cannabis? We ask a lot of basic kind of questions that we consider compatibility questions. I know that if I have a pet and if you don't want to live with pets, well, we had a nice chat, but I'm off to look for someone else who wants to live with pets. So that's the first stage. Then we have them move into the next stage, which is reading each other's profiles. They start to get to know each other from that, and then they start meeting with each other in person, if possible. They move into the meetups kind of stage and get to know each other more personally. And at that point, the basic questions are answered for compatibility. Now they start asking the more in-depth questions, the harder ones. You wouldn't normally ask a friend that you just met whether or not they can afford to live with you, but we do have to encourage the hard questions as well, because they're important. If you're going to share a lease with somebody, you want to know that they can afford to be there with you. So that's just one of the hard questions. Once they've decided that they want to live together, and they've gone through a process of asking the harder questions, getting to know each other at a deeper level, then we have what we call a homemade agreement that they work on together, which is like the house rules that they're going to live with. And that's an extensive document. That's part of the process. And then together, they find a place to live. Only rentals. We only do rentals.
Yes, but I think what stands out for me is that it's not prescriptive. They really generate the agreements together. You know, it takes work to do this together. You don't have a form, you give them guide rails, but essentially your community agreement might look very different from somebody else's community agreement, no?
Always. They're all very different. Yes, and actually, that's a good way to put it because we had talked about that, the board of directors. Well, maybe we should provide a template, but a filled-in template of the homemade agreement so they know what kinds of things to decide. Well, it just didn't feel right to me. These are grown-ups. They can decide what they want to put in for their rules around doing the laundry. They don't need anyone to tell them what that would be. So you're right. It makes more work in finding and pulling your group together. It might be two people, three people, four people. It's more work. But the process of going through those conversations starts building your community.
Yes, I think that seems very right. So you have been living with your housemates, or I don't know how you call each other.
We call it homemates because housemates, well, we might not be living in a house. You could be living in an apartment.
Homemates, yes, thank you. Your day-to-day life, how much do you cross paths? How much do you do together? Does this change over time, or do you have a certain routine?
That depends on the homemade group that you talk to. One of the first things in our homemade agreement is how much time do you want to spend with each other? Because if I come in and my expectation was that, oh, we're going to play cards, we're going to go to movies, we're going to go walking together, I'm going to have lots of time with these women. The other women I'm living with are too busy for all that, then I'm going to be terribly disappointed. So it's the first question on our homemade agreement that they talk about. Now, for myself and my homemades, we pretty much are each busy with our own separate lives. Of course, I'm spending an extraordinary amount of time on senior women living together, but I'm at home in my bedroom with my door closed. What we decided to do was that we'd prepare and eat dinners together. So we share that. And that way, there's a time every day that we spend together. And that's changed somewhat over time. Yes, it does change as things change. We go occasionally for shopping trips together, weekly grocery shopping we do together. One of us is a night owl. I'm a early bird. So, I might not see her at all until dinner. And that's okay. Or we might happen to meet up in the kitchen at various times during the day just by chance and chat for a bit. But we always say goodnight to each other, I noticed. There's been something sort of magical about that. There's someone there to say goodnight to, compared to living alone. That was a big bonus for me.
Yes, I can imagine that it's very nice to be able to say goodnight to somebody, closing out the day. And I am just curious, have you at all discussed what happens if health challenges arise and things change in the household? Have you addressed this amongst each other?
Yes, and that's another thing that's in our homemade agreement. So it's discussed up front. There's a section on aging together in there, and we encourage people to talk about these things before they happen. In my case, one of my homemates has had a terrible time with arthritis. She's had both knees replaced, one hip replaced. She has bad arthritis in her shoulder and in her wrist, and she's waiting for her second hip replacement. So she's had a real hard go of it and a lot of pain over that time. So we had already discussed the whole question of how we would help each other if, illness became an issue. What would we do if one of us starts to show signs of dementia, Alzheimer's disease? We already have had those conversations. How much caregiving are we willing to give to each other? Some women are coming into this after having spent years caregiving, perhaps their husband, perhaps also their mother and father. They don't want to do any caregiving, and there's nothing wrong with that. That's why the discussions have to be made ahead of time, and everyone knows what to expect if something happens.
Wonderful thing again is that everybody seems to have choice and agency. You sort of hold the space for them, but you don't tell them what to do.
No.
Why do you think women flock together like this? Why is there not a men's group who's doing
I
the same thing?
get asked that a lot, actually. In terms of need, I don't know what it's like in the States, but in Canada, there's a gender pension gap, a significant gender pension gap. I can't imagine why it wouldn't also be so in the United States, because the same issues arise. Women are less likely to have good pensions from work, for instance. The Canada pensions that we get are less than our male counterparts because we didn't work for 40 years straight. You know, we took time off for taking care of our kids, raising them. We took time off to help parents when they took ill, whatever. And it's about a $10,000 gap per year in
Wow.
Canada. So the average male gets 10,000 more than the average female. When you're not getting much anyway, $10,000 is a lot. So what prompted this whole thing, senior women living together, was women were at more risk of homelessness and have less money. We live longer with less. So never even occurred to me that it wouldn't just be for women. And when it came to me and I thought about it, I went to the Facebook group and posted, "What do you think of this? Should we open up for men too? Men might benefit from this too." Overwhelmingly, all the women said, No, let's stay together. Let's keep it for women only." So that's where it stays.
Affordability is a big incentive. Also, probably shared life experiences, what you go through as a woman versus go through as a man. You touched on this a little bit earlier that it's about renting. So all the women are renters. What changes when one woman owns a home and other women rent from her?
So there's definitely a distinct difference in that. The primary way the women get together through senior women living together is we all had our own rental place, and then together we rent a place. We do have homeowners join because women who've owned their home, they may be widowed or separated, divorced. You know, they're sitting in their four-bedroom house after the kids leave, and they still have to vacuum four bedrooms, and they're lonely often. And it is harder as we age to make friends, and we lose so many friends as we age as well. So they came to us early on and said, "Well, we'd like to do this too." We were concerned about it because there's a law here, or an act that governs tenants and landlords. And in a case when someone is living with a homeowner and sharing either a bathroom or a kitchen with the homeowner, they're not considered a tenant and they don't get the same rights a tenant would. So we were concerned about that. And so what we do is we have the homeowners create an agreement with our organization that they will provide the same kind of protections for the women who come and live with them as the Landlord and Tenant Act provides for tenants. It's not a legal agreement, it's a social contract between them and our organization. If they agree to that, then we will welcome them. It's worked out really well almost every time. But one of the ways it works out particularly well is because some women come to us and they're in dire straits. They've just been told they have 30 days to get out of their apartment after they've lived there for 20 or 25 years, and they have nowhere to go, and they're going to end up homeless or in a shelter or something. So when the homeowner's already there, the house is already there, if the two of them get along, now they have to still meet the compatibility issues because they're going to be living together. But if they go through that process and it works out well, the woman can move in quickly and not have to go to a shelter or be homeless. So it's turned into a good program for us.
I mean, you're addressing a really important need.
I didn't think of this at the beginning. Again, I've just kept learning every day new things. But really, what we do prevents homelessness, because that's how critical. I mean, rents up here in Ontario have tripled since 2019 when me and my group got together. Tripled. I mean, it's disgusting. It's actually shameful. But that is what we're faced with. And so these women, if they get booted out of a reasonable rental place, how are they possibly going to find something that they can still afford? And they can't, basically.
Yes, so the need would certainly also be here in the Bay Area. I mean, we are in a very similar situation. Hardly anybody can afford to be a renter anymore who has a normal income here in the Bay Area. I'm also curious, you know, you built a movement when you were 70 years old. Now you're 76. And how is this for you personally, investing yourself 100% into this initiative?
Well, you know, it's been phenomenal, really quite phenomenal. I work harder than I ever did my whole life with my jobs at this. It astonishes me every day. The women I meet, the stories they tell, the strength and the resilience they have is humbling. I do a lot of media conversations and, you know, people think I'm like out there in the spotlight and confident all the time, and I'm not at all. I'm always challenging myself to do better if I can. You know, the whole problem with nonprofits work is that everyone eventually gets burned out. So it worries me that this organization might not even exist 5 years from now because of that.
Yes, I hear you. Pat, because it seems just such a intuitive and simple solution you have come up with. Are you aware of any other similar groups somewhere else in the world?
I know municipalities up here occasionally have, over the last 10 years, I guess even, started up programs for homeowners to have students come and live with them and share some of the work and decrease the loneliness of the person living alone in their home and their students, so they get a, you know, a good rental rate. The research that I've read on these programs have found it to be varyingly successful. They pop up and then they disappear, I find. Next time I'm looking for them, they've stopped. It's challenging to help the two people, let's say, to start living together, to help them sort through all of the issues they have to deal with. And often they need support to, you know, build new agreements within the home. And sometimes they get so angry with each other that you can't help them and they end up leaving. That hasn't happened a lot with us, but it does happen sometimes. And from an agency point of view, of course, these agencies were starting up with municipal funds, so they at least had staff. But over time, the staff would get burnt out, I think, and they'd end up, you know, closing down their agencies.
So, Pat, I was just thinking similar things are happening here in the Bay Area. There are home match programs where people get matched. But the special things about senior women living together is that everybody's in sort of a similar phase of life. So that already, you know, provides a really good foundation for living together versus being in a different phase of life. So at least this, you know, is shared.
Yeah, that's right. And it's usually more than two. There's more community. One student, one homeowner could live like a community, but I think it would be different. As you say, the common ground of, you know, wrinkles and hip replacements and all the aging stuff and the past history. We talk about what happened when we were 30, 40, 20. Stories, lots of stories. And we have that common ground. Even things like music is a part of community. We have the same music. We lived through Elvis and the Beatles and the Rolling Stones and all of them. So we have that in common. I think those things all add up into building the sense of community.
Yes, absolutely.
You are listening to At Home On Air. We are now switching to questions by participating audience members in this recorded live episode. If you want a chance to ask your question, visit us at athomewithgrowingolder.org and register for the next live episode.
One question was, what are some of the difficult questions, you know, in the community agreement?
So, like I said, finances, talking about money isn't something you usually do with friends when you're meeting new people. Needing to know exactly what someone's income is in order to feel safe with signing a rental agreement. Those questions. Also, mental health. We can't ask those questions anyway because it would be illegal for us to ask. You can ask each other in conversation. That's perfectly fine. In the profile questions, the beginning questions, we ask people to explain any health related issues they have that would affect their homemates or could affect their homemates. So people are usually quite honest and willing to mention that they've got a bit of arthritis, their various mobility aids, if they have them, that sort of thing. We also ask people to talk about their mental health as well. It gets them started thinking about that. But very few people will say in the initial profile if they've been diagnosed with any mental illness. But that would be important to know, wouldn't it, if you're going to live with them? We recommend that they go at it easily or simply as, have you ever had a problem with depression? I know I have. I felt really depressed after my husband died. I went and saw a counselor. Has that ever happened to you? Have you ever, been to a counselor for depression? You can make it conversational and not too invasive that way. But really, what you want to know is, how depressed this person might become, because living with a depressed person can be difficult. At the same time, those women also need to have a kindness and community in their lives. But I'm not equipped to help somebody with a significant mental illness. Other agencies need to take a role in helping. Our goal is that the women come, they find a community of other women to live with, and they have fun together, they enjoy each other, they delight in the whole thing. And yes, they have arguments sometimes because people argue sometimes, but they're not under any threat during that argument.
And I think it's great that you encourage people to be frank and honest, because that is the foundation for successfully living together. And I'm sure in these 6 years, you have seen many different, ways of approaching this, and you're talking from experience. So thank you for sharing this. The other question was, do you have regular house meetings to discuss issues that come up? If you have this in your house, or if this is something you encourage.
Yes, absolutely. Community living, it's essential. You don't build community unless you have conversations about building community. So, unless you're meeting and talking about your community, it won't happen. So, we strongly encourage that. And we suggest they use the homemade agreement they started with as the foundation for those conversations. So, okay, at 3 p.m. on Sunday, we're going to meet, have a cup of tea around the kitchen table, and we're going to talk about our community. Well, let's first talk about laundry because what we've been doing isn't working anymore. So let's change that. Okay, great. So that kind of a conversation is way different than being angry with someone because they're not doing the laundry the way they're supposed to do it. Regular conversations like that just build more community. And settling differences in a community environment is much different than individually.
I would imagine, just listening to you, that for some people, they have to build this practice because it doesn't come naturally to everybody.
Absolutely. We know what it's like to live with other people. We grew up with parents and brothers and sisters and, perhaps grandparents living together. We may have had a roommate when we went to university in our 20s or whatever. But those aren't communities like I'm talking about. Parents have all the power and the kids don't have any. When you get four women sharing a kitchen and they all have equal rights in that, and nobody's the boss, and there's no supervisor, those four women have to decide how they're going to share the kitchen. And that's a different conversation than most of us have in other shared living arrangements growing up.
Now, this is a great example, Pat, and it really drives home the point that this is sort of equal rights communities.
Democratic.
Democratic, and this takes work. Democracy takes work.
It certainly does. But I mean, any relationship takes work, right? Friendships, your next door neighbors, that sometimes requires work. The people you work with, your co-workers, that requires work. Relationships are lots of work.
For people who learn this practice, do you give them any advice, or is there any sort of support group or where they can learn this?
Well, we start with our website. We have articles, blog posts, whatever you want to call them. We have an article on everything, how to make sure you can manage your pets, and your pets have to be compatible. So how are you going to know if your pets are compatible? We have articles on figuring out who's the best fit for you to live with and why. What makes someone compatible for you? How to figure that out.
If a group has problems, they have to figure it out by themselves, basically.
More or less, yeah. We have a chat program where they can contact us at any time and the volunteer leadership. And I have lots of Zoom meetings with homemade groups that are struggling with one thing or another. Lots of those.
That sounds very hands-on, Pat.
Yes, too hands-on. But that's where the burnout comes in, right? But what we need is, like everybody in the world, we need money. If we had the grant, then we could hire mediators. That's the first thing I'd be hiring.
Yeah. Another question is, what is the most wonderful aspect of living together? And you already said, you know, saying goodnight for you personally. Is there anything else which you have heard from other shared households, from homemates?
Yeah. Hugs. I hear a lot about hugs. Yeah. Especially, you know, if you've been living alone or married for a long time, 40 years, and then you're alone, you haven't had a hug from anybody. Hugs are big. Safety, the sense of safety is also mentioned a lot. COVID really heightened that, I think, for everyone around the world, didn't it? If you were living alone during COVID lockdowns, then you were alone. I mean, that was tough. Not even really being able to go to the grocery store. Everything was delivered. It was a dreadful time to live alone. Women started to realize, well, you know, I've never really felt afraid in my apartment before. But during COVID, I realized, well, if I fell and couldn't get to my cell phone to call for help, I'd just lie there. I'd probably just lie there and die there. Maybe that's part of the value of the saying goodnight, that somehow you're safe. I can go to bed. Someone's there. Part of that is locking the door. And yeah, I think safety is a big issue.
Thank you, Pat. Annette asks, are there social outings with the larger group of women who are a part of senior women living together with the larger community in Ontario?
Yeah, through the email system that we have, currently we're organizing picnics, senior women living together picnics for the summer. We have two organized now. These are separate cities throughout Ontario. One is in London, Ontario. One is in Peterborough. Toronto will have a picnic. And we invite other women from the community around there who may not be part of senior women living together at all to join and just come and talk with us. So we're looking forward to our picnics.
It's a wonderful idea, picnic, yes. Val asks, is it still Facebook exclusively, or is there now a website URL?
We moved our program to a website in 2021. It's simple as swlt.ca. You can't join, no, from California. Sorry.
We have to do our own group here.
You can't see into the back end. But what you can see is we have a whole bunch of articles about shared living that we share with the public. So you can see that.
Thank you. And then Danica asks, do you get any compensation for all this work?
No, not a penny. I spend some of my own money sometimes, but I didn't do it for the money. I did it to have what I got from it, which is the women I'm living with. for the sense of purpose. It's given me the feeling of comfort that I'm leaving something behind. That's a legacy that's made a difference in people's lives, and that's good. That's worth more than money.
Well, thank you for doing this amazing, amazing, amazing work. Also for really giving us a new understanding, I think, what it takes to build community and, you know, become housemates and take this seriously. It's serious work.
Indeed. Yeah, and important. So, yes, thank you very much for chatting. It's kind of weird to be talking to people in California, but hey, it's a small world.
It's a small world. That's, I think, the beauty of, you know, there's many disadvantages of the world we live in, but one advantage is that, you know, we can get connected.
Yes, and stay connected and not divided.
Yes, and we're not all Californians here.
Okay.
But anyway, thank you so much for this conversation. And maybe it will spur some, you know, senior women living together groups here in the Bay Area.
I can't help you do it, but I'm happy to answer questions and provide ideas, support, if somebody wants to get started doing it.
Yes, we would not put this on you, but thank you for generosity to be open to share. So thank you again, Pat. And everybody, please feel free to share it with friends and family. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much for having me and for all of you for listening.
This episode of At Home On Air was produced by the At Home with Growing Older team. We could not host these conversations without the generosity of our marvelous and passionate guests and hosts. Thank you for sharing your personal and professional insights. Thank you to our live audience for your thoughtful contributions. To subscribe to this podcast and for more information, visit us at homewithgrowingolder.org. At Home with Growing Older strives to educate, inspire, and connect people across generations and disciplines to re-envision and improve the experiences of later life. Don't forget to subscribe and tune in for the next episode.